What's good, Internet, and welcome to Session 56 of Super GG Radio, where friends chat about video games and all things adjacent. I am your host and perfect prince of platforming puzzles, Alex Arona. Jeez, give me a lot of peas in that one. Steve's going to be pissed. With me this week, as always, is future Gears of War superfan, Joel DeWitt. We keep calling you a superfan. But looks like Getty's finally picked the video game homework for us.
It's going to be a while before I can finish that. I don't play that in front of Kelly. She's prejudiced against dude bros.
Oof, rough. Just tell her that aliens are just really ugly people. Also with us this week is our pet indie pusher, Eric Getty Gettinger. Man, still with the peas. Is there a pet game you would not be interested in?
Bug related. Did you get Milo's Quest yet? It's totally a tactics game.
How much was it?
$5.
Maybe. It's a steep price point for that game. I'll think about it. Is it a Zelda-like?
Maybe.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out. But another guest for our March Guest Madness, a fellow podcaster and gamer visiting us from Gaming Fix, Pat. What's good, Pat?
Hello. I'm coming to you from my beautiful Seattle, Washington quarantine shelter right now. So we have hatches battened down.
How many bottles of water you got and toilet paper?
Plenty of toilet paper and... people don't need bottled water. Tap water's fine. The water's fine. Corona's not in the water.
But Corona's in bottles.
No, but people are going crazy about bottled water,
yeah.
Too. So
Yeah. The what's that super expensive brand of water?
Dasani?
There's a lot of expensive waters, Joel.
No, but like... There's
Evian, Fiji. Fiji's not that bad.
Fiji's not bad. There's, it's weird, but there's
like Voss. You mean Voss?
Yeah,
Smart
like
Water
that.
Is overpriced.
Like, that is the only water I'm seeing left at shelves in my area.
I think it's the ritzy one. Also,
glass bottles.
Also, Andre said we keep you, and he gets Joel.
He doesn't want me.
You don't know that.
You don't want me.
That's true.
I don't know if you guys want me.
It was a fair trade. Everybody loses. This week, I get freaked out in a space station in the backlog blog. We get ultra violent in early adopters and make another couple passes at the news before we get to know Pat a little better. But first, early adopters, where we play alphas, betas, and where we throw down and bro down. Joel, this week, you had been working on a game, Blood Roots.
Yes.
It was quite a colorful indie... What would you... beat him up?
Actually, you know, strangely enough, the closest thing I could compare this to in a way is Hotline Miami.
Okay.
When it comes to the gameplay itself, so Blood Roots is this sort of top down ish. Most of the time, it's playing more of like an isometric view, sort of run and hack and slash game. And each level of the game is comprised of these different areas that are constrained and fenced in, but there are different lanes of roads and stuff that are intertwining with different enemies littered all about. And you are playing this sort of barbarian warrior type that, similarly to Hotline Miami, you've got like a hood of an animal head on you, and then you can find collectible other animal heads as you go on. And then you run across these lanes and have to pick off every enemy that you run across and clear the area before you are allowed to go on.
Okay.
While you're going through these different lanes, like, there are weapons and items and stuff littered about. So you have a basic punch here, but it's kind of, you have to be really precise, and then also you pause for long enough where another enemy could come out and knock you off. And the weapons and items allow you to much more smoothly go from enemy to enemy to enemy and chain hit these bad guys off.
What kind of weapons
do they break?
They have a durability. Most of them are between 2 or 3 hits, and there'll be different things like axes will have a sort of heftier hit down. They've got swords that have a sort of thrust that really moves you and propels you across. Guns, and also these sort of joke ones too, so like you can put a fish
on a stick, and please.
No, just a fish. And you'll go up to the enemy, and instead of hitting him with the fish, you jump up and just, like, engulf the guy's head inside the fish and let go, and then he does, like, a Looney Tunes kind of, like, running around and screaming before he falls over and keels over.
So it's almost like a custom animation per weapon.
Yeah. Like, each individual weapon has a different attribute and efficacy, because, like, the normal actual weapons are pretty one and done in terms of killing them.
Yeah.
But then there'll be things like pots or bottles that, or like a hay bale where you'll hit them, but it just sort of stuns them along enough to where you can kill them with your hand.
Okay.
There's also environmental stuff throughout these different levels too, where like it can sort of cause a chain of like Rube Goldberg type events where it'll be like a barrel, and if you jump on the barrel, you'll start doing the sort of running on it to propel it forward. And then you can hit the jump button, and it'll do sort of like the kick the barrel forward to knock him off that way. Or if you don't have a dab in front of you, you can just keep running, and you'll just be able to trample over several of the guys, too, before jumping off it. Or similarly, there's like a hay rack that you can jump on. And what happens is that the hay rack will just move forward and can knock over and kill guys, but also knock over in the like wall or something like that. And there are like things like fires, like campfires sometimes in certain levels. And in those levels, if you pick up like a hay bale, it'll catch fire, and then you can run across, and where there's grass on the ground, that'll catch fire. And if people are on that space, they'll catch fire and die from it.
Gory.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so it feels like when I compared it to Hotline Miami, I guess the main thing was that these levels, you have to be pretty quick and react, or even not even react, but like you can strategically figure out the best way to dispatch enemies in succession in a way that is effective and efficient. And if you don't do that, that you get immediately in danger of being knocked off. And when you get knocked off and killed, it does the same thing where it'll sort of respawn you back from the beginning. Or in this case, it's checkpointed off in different segments in each level. So
sounds like you're kind of moving fast and trying to hit the combos of, you know, kill this enemy, grab a new weapon, kill this enemy. So that, you know, that does sound like Hotline Miami.
How successful have you been?
Yeah. You know, it's been sort of like a slow burn of a level to get done, kind of like you would in Hotline Miami. It is a little more forgiving than that game, though, in that, like, there's so many weapons and items that can help you if you find yourself making a mistake that can save you or spare you. Hotline Miami, it felt like weapons and items were very strategically placed to be like, this is really the only one true path we envisioned you wanting, being able to be successful in. And this one, you can improvise a little bit if something goes awry and spare yourselves more often than not. So, like, it's still kind of trial error. And there are specific lanes that you can go through that's like the most efficient route. But if you go against that route, you can kind of still push through it and brute force your way through. So, like, I think it if you want something that's a little more forgiving, allows you to sort of explore and try things at different ways where you feel like it's still feasible to succeed if you fail the first time, I think it's doing well by that premise. And like the visual style too, I want to touch upon real quick. Like the basic character models that they choose and the art style doesn't really grab me. Part of it, I guess, is because the enemies are all pretty samey. They're these guys that are just big, brutish looking like soldiers and stuff with very similar costumes throughout. There is a nice color contrast between the backdrop and the characters that pops in a nice way otherwise. And they do some cool stylistic things in some levels where one was in nighttime, and when you start, you're a black silhouette mm-hmm. walking around.
Yeah.
And as you get through each different checkpoint, they show your character looking stained red up and down and bloodied more and more as you're getting through this level. So, like, they do some neat visual touches, too, but it doesn't...
But it does kind of... It keeps, like, a cartoony
a little bit of like a cartoony vibe to it, though, right?
It does. I mean, and it's contrasted with a pretty bloody, violent thing happening each time you slice or kill somebody. And like one other nice visual flair thing they do is that if it's the last kill in a zone before you move on to the next zone, they will do a little like a cutscene of your guy doing a like very almost action film kill move and then flare, you know, before they move you on to the next segment. So it's like really clever in that way too.
Okay. Now, I had another question. From what I saw, the visual style, and the way the storytelling was, it had almost like a cultural feel to it.
Like a little bit.
Is there a cultural like reference for it? Like it's trying to give off like a, oh, this is these type of people or something like that?
Like Norse?
Yeah.
It kind of looked like it from the art style, or at least from the character designs. You're being weird.
Well, no, it's more the fact that the
right, thanks.
No, it reminded me a little like Guacamelee, and Guacamelee very much went on the Mexican culture and brought up a lot of it. And then I remember watching cutscenes for Bloodroots and seeing some of the gameplay, and their accents are very heavily in, like the accents are not hidden. It's very much, it sounds like some of these people have very heavy accents, and it sounds like the music and the tone and the story is all referencing a very specific culture, and that's what I was more curious about.
Norse.
The fact that I can't answer it, it's probably more a reflection on my absence of knowledge on that. But, I do kind of agree with Jetty. Like, I guess sort of the framing of the characters looks a little bit that way. But the main character almost has a dwarvish kind of look to him as well, and Woodsman is really kind of the closest thing I could really get to in thinking that there's a visual, you know, character style they went with. Okay. I mean, some of the landscapes do have kind of an Aztecian backdrop in it, but I'm not sure if that's really a culture pull or more like the color palette they went with.
Yeah, see, that's what I couldn't tell. That's where I was more curious about.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
It looks like they're going for like a Wild West sort of thing. It says on their the Steam page for it, it references Weird West, which is like Wild Western stuff mixed with some fantasy or horror.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that level of space I was talking about, it also has kind of an Arizonian landscape.
Yeah, very southwestern looking.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this actually happened in Arizona then. What? You guys ever been to Arizona?
No.
And that there you
makes,
go.
It makes it impossible to refute you.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was Bloodroots. Now, Pat, you had mentioned two games. Did you want to pick one or the other? Did you want to go into both? Because I have Spellbreak I'm familiar with. Legends of Runeterra I am not.
I think, you said you guys talked about Spellbreak a bit once before. Is that,
you talked about it many times before.
No, I think that was
way back.
Our first ever episode, was that?
I don't have to go into super deep detail on it, just to say more that I was originally interested in the idea and then played the closed beta last year, around October, I think it was, and was not impressed with how the game felt. Like, I was pretty bummed out. I didn't really like how it looked. I didn't really like how it felt. And I just kind of let it go. But they recently released their big closed beta 2 update. Yeah. And I think if you had a similar reaction to me and were in the closed beta and didn't really enjoy it, this new update overhauled a lot of systems and it made the game feel totally different. So I think it's a huge overhaul, and I actually recommend it now. And, you know, if you're into battle royales and want something a little bit different, I think it's something to be excited about now. Whereas last year I liked the idea and then was pretty disappointed when I actually got my hands on it. But there's not a lot of it's all really just very game feel stuff. It just feels better to move around and use the spells and it just overall and looks better. So I don't think there's anything too specific to talk about there, just that I'd give it another look if you still have an interest in it, because it got a lot better.
Funny enough, that was the first beta test that we ever got into was Spellbreak back in February 2019. And I liked it a lot, and I had a lot of fun with it. And then we kind of both went away from it. And then I played it for a stream, Multiplayer Mondays, and it was laggy, it was floaty, yeah. And it took 5 minutes to find a match. It just... Yep. I was having a lot of problems with it, and I just said, I don't need to play this anymore. So you telling me that it has improved significantly is enough for me, because the concept originally with having these gauntlets, having armor pieces, having these abilities to change your cooldowns, combining your spells to, you know, make a poison explosion or make, you know, a lightning storm, just these kinds of things.
Yeah.
It's a really good concept for me that I think that I'd be into.
If I have any criticisms of it at this point, it all feels really good now. It's just, I almost wish there were more spells. It's not that there aren't a lot of them. There's like several different ones, and they each level up and stuff, and they each have a primary and a secondary fire and everything. So like there's plenty there. It's just, I would like to see even more of that stuff, because I think there's a lot of, it's a really cool concept, and there's a lot of potential there for them to continue to expand on it. But it's fun now, and I recommend it for sure. I would even say, like, if you really want to play it and haven't gotten invitation, there's like a $20 Founders pack that I would probably say is worth it at this point, because the games are a little snappier to get into. It's less floaty. There's not the same kind of lag. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Awesome. I think Getty is the only one that hasn't played that yet. Getty, did you end up giving it a shot or no?
No.
You got in?
No. I haven't tried.
There you go.
As I thought. Listen, I got a very tight schedule of commitments that I have to adhere to.
Pat, I don't know if you've heard, but we did the numbers. Getty is averaging 4.6 games a month beating.
It's three Jeez. Months into the year. Calm down.
He's currently going through what you're currently in. Was it? What were you just playing?
When?
Well, Slay the Spire.
Slay the Spire, yeah.
Which you almost beat within your first run.
I on my second run with the first character, I made it to the last boss, and then I've been having trouble with the second character, the rogue, but the robot, I can't believe this is turning into Slay the Spire talk. I have gotten a couple of areas before the last boss, and ultimately had to start over, so...
You know, I'm pretty sure all road lights just have a random number generator in the background deciding whether or not it's going to be the run you win
well,
or not.
You can... You know what? This has the seed code so that you can play the same run.
Well, hold on.
That actually is a nice feature.
Our resident rogue expert sent me a little factoid that he thought might be good for us to know. It's only a roguelike if it comes from the roguelike region of France. Otherwise, it's just sparkling RNG.
Stop. He didn't actually say that, did he?
No, he did. He did. He literally sent me that text like 5 minutes
ago. You know what? That's great.
Yeah, you know, that was bad until you shared that was an actual, like, there was a journey there where I was worried you were actually going to give us a factoid, and then you tried to pivot it into a joke,
yeah.
And then it went back up to being an actual thing that was sent to you, and it became funny.
Come on, Joel. So. You know that we're not a legitimate source for news or entertainment.
Okay, hold on. Back to the point here. Legends of Runeterra. Tell me about...
So speaking of card games...
All right.
I'm also a pretty big Slay the Spire fan, but of a different... Card games of a different sort. Have you guys played Hearthstone before?
Yes.
A tiny bit.
Alex hates it.
So I also hate it.
I like that one.
Do you? Oh, that's right, because of the mana thing. Okay.
Yes.
I am a pretty huge fan of physical card games and like tabletop games in general. And originally when Hearthstone came out, I was super, super, super into it. Because it was like, you know, one of the first ways to play a trading card game, digitally. But, over time, I just think it's like the balance is not very good in that game, and the way that they've, developed it over time just didn't work for me. So, I kind of moved around between a bunch of different games, different card games. But Legends of Runeterra, which is the new, still in beta, digital trading card game from Riot Games, entered beta. I think it's now like a month and a half, 2 months ago, which feels like 10 years ago, but it's been out for a little bit. And it is a really, really cool refinement of a lot of the ideas that that Hearthstone implemented. It still has the same kind of mana system that Hearthstone has, where you don't, you just gain energy over the course of the game to play cards with.
That's what I like.
But it is, yeah, but it's based on, in fact, like, even has a cool system where, like, there's unit cards and spell cards. Those are kind of the two main divisions between the different kinds of cards in the game. And you can bank up to three of your mana per turn to a spell mana bank. Mm-hmm. That is saved and reserved for casting spells on your next turn. So it even has things like you can make cool strategies where maybe you don't plan to play cards on your first turn and you want to just bank your first turn mana so that you can play a spell and a unit on turn two or three or something like that. So it takes the mana system from Hearthstone and actually expands on it a little bit. But what I like best around it is there's a concept of win conditions in card games when you build decks. Obviously, the win condition is to win. It's to knock out your opponent. Mm-hmm. But different decks sort of have different ways that they do that, whether it's putting a bunch of creatures on the board really fast or whether it's staying alive for long enough to cast a huge spell, whatever. It's just true of Hearthstone. It's true of any card game. So... Have you guys played, like, League of Legends that much before?
I have.
No.
I have.
Okay. So, this card game is set in the League of Legends universe. For those that don't know, that's what Runeterra is the sort of fictional world that League takes place in. So, you tend to build your decks in Legends of Runeterra around specific champions from League of Legends. They're strict rules for how many champion cards you can include and like the amount of different champions you can have. And then tied to your champion selection is kind of the different regions of the world are sort of the different classes in Hearthstone or the different colors in Magic. So you might take a Noxus champion and an Ionia champion, for example. And your champions kind of give you your win conditions. So there's champions like Fiora, who is a fencer. She's a top laner usually in League of Legends. And in Legends of Runeterra, if she's able to kill a certain number of enemy units, you just win the game. You don't even have to deal damage to your opponent. If she can kill, I want to say it's 7 enemy units, you win. That's very hard to do because she's pretty fragile. So then the game becomes protecting her and keeping her alive so that she can take out enemy units specifically. It becomes a totally different kind of game.
Well, especially considering that the opponent would then not want to throw in a lot of enemy units.
Right. And so the way that it works, this is a big differentiator from Hearthstone. In Hearthstone, you choose what enemy unit you want to attack when you do an attack or whatever. In Runeterra uses the Magic the Gathering system where I say, I'm attacking with these three creatures or characters, and then you pick who's going to defend and who they're going to defend. So Fiora has an ability called Challenger, which lets her select someone to attack, which helps her to achieve her win condition. But to your point, it means that like your opponent's not going to want to put out weaker enemies that she can easily kill. So she's powerful against different kinds of decks.
I mean, unless you try and do like a jump block, and then if you have a sweet ability, maybe you can hit her. Do they have like the sorcery instance in this, like you'd find in Magic?
Yeah. Right. Yep, so that's the other great thing is that this game has... Hearthstone's biggest problem, in my opinion, is there's not a lot of interactivity. It's like you do your stuff, I do my stuff. There's those trap cards that you can leave
like
as triggers.
Kinda.
But yeah, but there's no like, wait, stop your turn, I'm going to do a thing. So Runeterra has that. So it has like instant abilities where you can say, you can set me up for, well... If Fiora kills one more enemy, then I win the game, so I'm going to attack you, and then you can play an instant that, like, makes it so that her attack stat goes to zero for the turn or something like that. So it does a lot of that stuff that something like Magic the Gathering does, and it makes it a lot more dynamic and interesting, I think, and just generally more fun to play.
I'm really fascinated about the idea of the different decks having different objectives that you have to accomplish to get to a win state thing. And it sounds like it could be very different experience depending on which one you choose. And I mean,
yeah, and to some extent, Fiora is the most extreme example. Most of the other characters, the ultimate goal is still to reduce your opponent's life to zero. But like Garen, for example, when he survives a certain number, it's when he attacks two times, his character card levels up, and then suddenly he deals a lot more damage. My favorite character, who is far from my favorite character in League of Legends, but in Runeterra, is Jinx. So Jinx, you have to empty your hand to level her up. And then once she's leveled up and you empty your hand, she gives you a card that costs no mana to play that deals 4 damage to an enemy. You play her with like super aggro decks where you're trying to just play everything as quick as possible in hopes that you start getting those 4 damage cards, because then 5 of those at your opponent's face and you win. So there's a lot of that kind of, even the ones that still have to deal damage to win, they have a different ways to get to a point where they are capable of doing that win state damage. Mm. So yeah, it's really cool and it's really diverse, and there's just a lot of different ways there to play, I think. And so there's something kind of for everyone, whether you like control or aggro or really tricky decks, there's all that stuff in there.
Oh, it sounds pretty interesting. Where can I play this game?
So probably just Google it, but it's right now it's on PC only. I don't know what it's probably Legends of Runeterra.
Okay. I was wondering if it was on Steam
coming
Epic Store.
No, and it won't ever go there, I don't think. PlayRuneterra.com looks like the web address. Riot does their own stuff separately, like League isn't on Steam or anything either. But Runeterra will be coming to mobile devices in the next few months, I think. So that's kind of where it's headed next. It's also interesting because it's you get a lot of free cards, and you buy specific cards. It's not like Hearthstone where you're buying packs, and this is maybe the coolest thing about it from a business perspective, at least. Instead of buying like a pack of 5 random cards, you purchase a different levels of rarity wild cards. So you might purchase a champion wild card for like, I think they're like $3. I don't remember how the currency works out exactly. But then that just lets you pick any of the champion cards you want to add to your collection. So same thing with like the rare and common cards. There are random packs that you can get for free for just playing, but there is no way to purchase a random pack of cards. You're always purchasing the ability to select from a different rarity tier what card you want to add to your collection. So you can kind of like build a deck and then go, okay, so for me to get this deck and finish it, I need to spend about $8 on the store kind of thing, which is really nice. And it means that, like, you won't have to do the whole buy $200 in packs when a new set comes out to be competitive.
Which is always a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, Hearthstone's terrible for that. They also, for now, I don't know that they're going to do this forever, but in the beta, they actually limit the number of cards you can buy with real money. So you can't just, like, buy the entire set in a week. They make it so you can only buy, like, I think it's like 20 cards a week, which is kind of an interesting thing to do to keep it from being like all of the most serious players have all the cards on day one.
Or that's definitely a problem.
Whoever has the most money.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then it has, you know, level up progression, a bunch of different ways to get more stuff, a bunch of cosmetic stuff. So, yeah, I highly recommend it if you have any interest at all in card games. And even if you haven't really been into card games before, but you like the characters and art from League of Legends, that's all there and really, really vibrant. And they did a really good job with, like, instilling it with all that character.
Now, is this one of the League of Legends offshoot games that they're currently, you know, developing?
Yeah, it is developed internally at Riot. So the two sort of spinoffs I guess there's actually 3 spinoffs from League that are being developed internally by like Riot-owned teams are the fighting game that they're working on, which is by the Rising Thunder devs that they own now, And then Legends of Runeterra, and then the Wild Rift, which is like their console and mobile version of League of Legends. And I guess technically Teamfight Tactics, that's like a mode within the League of Legends client, but it's also launching or would have just launched when you hear this on mobile devices as its own thing too. So yeah, those are all kind of the like internal Riot stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely remember that they like had a bunch of games ready to go, but
yeah, and then they have the like external teams that are kind of like using the world and then getting the Riot seal of approval. Like there's like a Bilgewater game that's like an action top-down isometric action game that has Thresh in it or something. And then there's the one with Echo in it. Like there's a bunch of different smaller projects that are not Riot developed, but kind of Riot approved on the way too, which is pretty neat.
Okay. Makes sense. So, that was Legends of Runeterra.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a solid week for early adopters. It's only going to get better. I signed us up for like 15 more. There's Jumpala, Zero Grave, Pazezi.
God, stop.
Fight World, West of Dead, Rose and Locke.
Wait, I don't know if these are betas or HBO shows.
Sugar Overkill.
No, that is a game. I've heard of that one before.
I see Tanknarok, Guntastic, Tesla Force, Jousty Dragons, Vector Racer.
All right, Joel.
Zordek.
Get this out of here.
Daymare, 1998.
Sup news. I'm going to treat you like a nice brisket and take it low and slow this week.
That's real hot.
Yep. You put your heart into that.
I know. I'm proud of you. I was trying it out.
Yeah, each time you do it, I'm like, man, I'm real glad I'm making you do this because you do good work. Okay, we have some news this week. The big one that came out first was the Nintendo Nindie Showcase. A bunch of indie games coming out. First one I saw that was interesting, I Am Dead, an environmental puzzle game coming out. And all these games, they look like to be like coming out 2020.
I'm missing some Exit the Gungeon here.
Exit the Gungeon was on there. I'm the only one that talks about it, you know, Enter the Gungeon, so I was like, well...
Well, you have to exit it sometime, yeah?
Probably.
Probably.
You know, it... It said something that the game I remember most from this was the Cyanide and Happiness one, that Freakopocalypse game.
Freakopocalypse,
but only because like it popped up and I was like, wait, oh weird, Cyanide and Happiness, and then suddenly just a string of really awful jokes. Like, just,
yeah, did they didn't show any footage from that, right? I definitely skipped past
they did. That. I mean, what kind of game? It kind of reminded me a little bit of like the South Park games.
Yeah,
it kind of seemed like they had.
Yeah, that was the impression I got, and I was pretty quickly put off.
They're also very popular because they come out with that card game. They came out with a card game where you have to do like the Cyanide and Happiness comic strip, where each person has to pick a section of the comic strip in three panels. But
yep,
it's okay. It's fine.
it's okay.
It's fine for people who like it. I don't...
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Summer in Mira, an island farming 3D, almost Stardew Valley. That one, I have contacted developers on that one to see if we could get them.
And do they believe that we're in a legitimate establishment?
They would have to answer me first for me to know. But when they do...
We should really do a custom URL for our email or something like that, so it's not @gmail.com.
Yeah. Probably. Future projects.
Well, at least our Gmail now has a picture of the logo in it.
Did it not?
Previously, it did not.
Son of a... Okay. Quantum League, that crazy first-person shooter that
you explained
was very confusing.
Yes.
Time travel.
Yeah, that's a cool game. I played that at PAX last year, and it's wild.
I had problems following it. I played it a week or two ago, and I had problems following what was happening just because... The time paradoxes of you blocking somebody from getting a point, but then also it blocked me from getting a point. It just got very confusing.
Yeah, it seems like a game that could be really cool if you got, like, very good at it, but I don't know that I have it in me to be very good at it. I'd like to watch people who are very good at it.
Yes. Though. See, that's a game I'd watch, yeah. Joel, did you get the name of the Hello Games new game?
No, but it did make me want to play Joe Danger a little bit.
It's I think it's called The Last Campfire.
That sounds right. That game looks adorable.
What kind of game was that? I don't even remember this.
It's like a sort of adventure puzzle game. It has kind of the vibe of something like a Brothers.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I remember they announced it, I think, last year around E3, maybe. It might have been later than that. But I remember seeing it and kind of like, I'm a fairly big No Man's Sky fan, and I think it's cool that they're doing something different. I wouldn't expect them to just, like, make more games like that, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I was not super impressed with it when they showed it last year. But in this indie showcase, I thought it was really, it looked really impressive. So
I will say, I'm happy Hello Games is working on something besides No Man's Sky as well. Just because when that all happened and they put so much time into trying to make it work after the fact, my whole thought was that they're going to spend the rest of time supporting this. And, like, that right. could turn into a full-time career, too, if they wanted to expand upon it and offer in-game purchases and things like that to flesh out things, but I'm glad they're still working on some of these smaller projects.
And I think that's kind of the plan eventually, but they've been spending so much time getting on people's good graces again and, like, getting that game into a place where it's something everyone likes before they want to try to start charging for anything in it. But as I understand it, this Last Campfire game, I mean, I'm sure that Murray is involved in it because he's the studio head, but it's actually, like, a pretty small subset of people at the studio, so it's not like everybody is working on it, the whole No Man's Sky team. It's more like a smaller set of people, and then he's serving as more of a producer role rather than a designer on it.
Yeah, sure. I just remember that the announcement had blatantly Sean Murray front and center.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then Superliminal, which we've played, it's quite a fun little Stanley Parable-esque game. Sky, Joel, you really liked Sky, and now you're not stuck at mobile.
I would pay for a copy of it on a console here. Like, that deserved better than the mobile version. As much as I enjoyed playing some of it,
But you were playing it on a cracked screen.
Yeah. Those games deserve to be on a TV.
Yeah, that was my impression of playing the little bit of it that I did on Apple Arcade. Or not even Apple Arcade, it was just on...
Yeah, it was just free to play. Yeah.
Moving Out, which again, we have also applied for codes on. If only because it shares that Billy Joel song. Maybe that's just me, guys.
It is.
Yes. Okay. Billy Joel. Dicey Dungeons, which I'm excited for. That's a roguelike that I've been wanting to get into, and now that it's going to be on Switch, it'd be perfect.
That's a very good game.
Is it?
I'm excited. Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm very excited to see it go to other platforms. I selfishly want it on my phone more than on a Switch, but... if it's come to Switch, then phones can't be too far behind.
Yeah, agreed. And the last one, I kind of thought that was noteworthy for me. Blair Witch, which was weird.
Yeah.
Is anybody asking for that?
Somebody was.
I don't think so. Somebody's asking for literally every game that has been developed and has yet to be developed to be on Switch. There is someone asking for that, so I guess.
Now, that was the Nindie Showcase, which I thought was fun. I always like seeing the developers, especially a lot of these developers were international, so you got to feel their presence and who they were. But side to that, Void Bastards accidentally got revealed for Switch. Someone put it out, like, on BestBuy.com or something like that. So Void Bastards is coming to Switch, which is a fun game, a fun little roguelike.
It seems like a good place for it. I got, like, bored of that game super, super fast, but having it in, like, to play on, like, a commute or something could be pretty cool.
That and, like, playing it in a chunk, doing, like, three ships in a run and then just, like, walking away for, like, a week.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a good game to, like... I could see it as, like, a good bedtime, lay in bed, play on the Switch for 20 minutes or something before bed kind of thing.
So that is Void Bastards coming out soon. Then there was a Sony PS5 presentation. Man, was that technical.
Mm-hmm.
Man, was that technical. Did you guys watch it, or was that just me?
I just looked at the specs afterwards. I did not have time this week. As it would turn out, it's still busy at work.
Can imagine.
Yeah.
I got the lowdown on it from our Alex over at Fix, and he was really excited about it because has worked in game development and does a lot of engineering and stuff. So he was excited about it, and then I got like irrationally frustrated, like not with him, but in general, because he and Andre started talking about like the ear scanning tech to do audio profiling, and I was like, you don't need to know about any of this crap. I'm so tired of this.
Get out while you can.
Like, tell me a price, tell me a release date, show me a game. Come on,
just anything.
Yeah, but I'm also in marketing, so for me it was like,
this is not selling me on anything.
I was watching it as a marketer. Like, I'm in marketing because I like the idea of like helping people buy products that they're going to get a lot of use out of, mm-hmm. rather than just making a bunch of money. So for me it was like, you're not selling anyone on this and not explaining to me why I should save money for it, and I got very frustrated. But at the end of the day, the stuff they showed was still really cool.
Yeah. Now, the thing, I thought I saw somebody say that was originally a presentation that was going to be done at GDC that ended up not happening.
That's what Cerny opened with.
Okay. I didn't actually watch it, so the only thing I saw of it was the screenshot being passed around about 100 games being enhanced backwards compatibility, or was it just how many were backwards compatible?
It was more that he's saying that they looked at what were the 100 best, like most played by hours and users games, and those were the ones that they were going to focus on for backwards compatibility first.
You know what that means? Destiny 2. What? Yes! I can't wait to have Andre on.
And I think, like, if they had marketed it as a GDC talk through their channels, and then I wouldn't have gotten as frustrated, because like it was the way they were like, we're gonna do a PS5 tech talk, and it made it sound like, oh, you have a presentation, you were gonna do a stage show, because of the state of everything you can't do it now,
and you're gonna communicate in a way that's understandable to the layman instead of
right.
a super technically savvy audience.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because I saw people being like, cool, awesome, announcement, release date, and games. And it's like, nope, far from it.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, though, that Xbox stream that they did later in the day was significantly worse.
Oh, was it? I didn't even see that one.
I only watched it for like 10 minutes, but it was very painful and had like not a lot of information and was just kind of like, similarly techy, but not being delivered by someone like Mark Cerny. It was being delivered by like somebody from the inside Xbox team, and it was hard to watch, I would say.
Why do you guys think that it seems like both of them have been so cagey about providing more details to the customer?
It's because of each other.
Yeah, they're trying to see who shoots first, and then it's not who shoots first, it's who shoots themselves in the foot first.
Yeah, it's all like a game of chicken. And we kind of had this conversation too about how like the cycle is going to be really short and everything, and I just think it's frustrating. It's not that I don't think they'll be successful. I just think it's frustrating given like the state of the global economy right now. Like, give people some information. Just like quit it and try to share some information so people can start to plan for whether they want these consoles or not. The thing with like Microsoft, they're not doing a particularly better job of messaging, but at least they came out and said like, look, your Xbox One X is going to play Halo Infinite, and it's going to continue to play new games into 2021. So I feel less anxious about getting information on release date and price for that system, because it sounds like it's more of an upgrade than it is a necessity.
Well, and Microsoft has done a lot to try to get goodwill to be able to bank on for people for this generation too, right? I mean, how many times have I been able to extend my Xbox Game Pass for like $1 a month for 3 or 4 months? And, just as a value proposition, it's great, even if I was paying full price for it. But,
And we literally will text each other and be like, all right, here's a coupon, get Xbox Game Pass for 3 months. We're like, oh, crap, okay. Got 3 more months. I'm going to stay on this for 3 more months. Be damned if I'm paying full price on that one.
Yeah, I ended up doing an Xbox All Access to get a One X early last year, end of 2018. So I basically, like, they have you finance all that stuff up front, and it was great when they unveiled Game Pass Ultimate. They basically like took when you get the all access plan. When I got it, they gave you. You bought 2 years of Game Pass and 2 years of Xbox Live. So when they revealed Game Pass Ultimate, what they did for existing All Access customers was just roll it all together into 4 years of Game Pass Ultimate. So it basically like extended my Game Pass and Xbox Live for 2 years without me having to do anything. I had to pay like $1 as an authorization fee, basically. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's they've done a pretty good job of that, handling that stuff.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. I'm surprised both of them aren't pushing hard that sort of financing option for the consoles. Like,
I have to imagine that Microsoft will with the Series X.
They're definitely positioned more, I think, than Sony is to try to bank on that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, there is another piece of news. Rumored release date for the Xbox Series X slated for Thanksgiving.
Just seems very soon. I don't know. I'm not convinced that they're going to get... their production spun up in time given like everything that's happening right now, but at the same time I'm not a supply chain manager, so.
But you know who is?
No, no. Absolutely, you know the not. Rules we don't talk about work during podcast.
Only I introduce work topics at the podcast,
and even then we don't.
Close. Okay, so next piece of news. Sony rumored to be buying Konami's Castlevania, Metal Gear, and Silent Hill franchises. Also, Kojima Productions in talks to do the next Silent Hill game, as well as there is going to be another Silent Hill by somebody else. All rumors, all very exciting.
What was the source of this?
Well, Kojima had been hinting at it for a while, and then I'm going to look it up now, but it's kind of been all over the place.
Alex with the internet.
Mm-hmm. I'm on the internet sometimes, you know.
I mean, I guess in some ways they feel like a natural home for... Well, Castlevania kind of doesn't. I guess more recent memory, maybe, but, like, its home is steeped in Nintendo. But, like, I don't know
is that this is... If this means that Hideo Kojima is going to do a Metal Gear Solid 6, I will lose my mind. I'm not even a Metal Gear fan, but I will lose my mind.
There's nothing else to talk about. We got everything we needed.
Isn't there?
Did we?
Yeah.
I think he needs to go back and finish Metal Gear Solid 5.
It's not done by any stretch of your imagination.
I mean, I guess we could find out what Snake was doing when Snake was doing...
But. Wow, that was good.
I think that he could do. I mean, I don't know. I have not finished Metal Gear Solid 5. I didn't particularly like Metal Gear Solids 1 through 4. I think I will like the 5 a lot when I finally play it, mm-hmm. because I like the structure of it more. But I do know the story of at least 1 through 4, and I would have after 4 said, "There's no way you can." Like, there's nothing else to do, and then there was more backstory to tell. I'm almost positive that he could come up with more.
Oh, yeah, without question. Also, it is a known Konami leaker known as Jack of All Controllers.
Well.
But he has been correct in the past, so at this point he is saying that they are looking to buy Konami IP, with Konami having said that they are looking to find ways to use Silent Hill to make profit and trying to bring that back. So that's kind of been a thought, but the leaker also referenced Castlevania and Metal Gear.
Seems legitimate.
Well, I guess selling them off would yield profit for Konami, but that'd be a one-time transaction.
Also, add the Yakuza. And then Joel removed the GameStop thing with...
I changed my mind.
You know why? Because his wife is going to go get him a game from GameStop tomorrow, so...
No. local game store.
I heard GameStop.
GameStop was messed up. Anyway, Getty, you want to take us out of here?
Yeah, you know, short news week equals didn't cook long enough, so we're going to try to get a piece of the news next week so we don't end up sick. We're going to get the news one of these days.
One day, Getty, you'll get it. Or get them. All right, let's take a break.
back with the Backlog Blog, where we play games from our back catalog that we've always dreamed of. One of them's a nightmare, and one's a lifelong dream. Pat, you being our guest, I'm going to let you go first here. Tell me about my dream of racing. Tell me about the Crew 2.
Yeah, so when the Crew 2 came out, I actually played quite a bit of it. And I liked it a lot more than most people did. But it definitely was not everything that it could be. Have any of you guys played either of the Crew games before?
Nope. Afraid not. No.
No.
So the first one's is bad. It's really only good for the novelty of like driving across the country. But, like, you can get a much more engaging experience out of playing, like, American Truck Simulator or something if you want a road trip game.
Yeah.
The Crew 2, it looked like it was going to be a lot more interesting. And at launch, it was, I think, better than the first game. But it's still the biggest problem that game had was all the vehicles pretty much sounded the same or felt the same. Mm-hmm. So, like, the planes flew the same, the cars all drove the same, the boats all drove the same, and there were some motorcycles that were all pretty much the same. And so it didn't really feel like it mattered. Like, your vehicle just felt like a skin. And then on top of that, the AI just was super rubber bandy, and there was really nothing to do with other players at all. So you could, like, race co-op, but all it did just was just mean that you were both setting a time against the AI. So I liked the game, but I fell off of it after I finished the, like, quote, story, which was pretty limited. I realized recently that I hadn't played it in a while. And part of the reason I fell off of it was because Forza Horizon 4 also came out. And then that game is significantly better than the Crew 2. So I played a ton of that. Recently I decided to go back and take a look at the Crew 2. I think I saw some tweet from the developer of the Crew that was interesting or something. I can't even really remember what led me to reinstall it. But that game has changed in classic Ubisoft fashion. That game has changed immensely since it came out. They have done, like, the most important thing is they have done so much work to the handling model of that game. So now pretty much every vehicle feels pretty unique and different, mm-hmm. Which is really cool. The different kinds of cars and boats and stuff also feel significantly different now. The AI got tuned a lot. So I think it's, like, it's really fun, just generally. And then they've added a whole suite of these, like, service game features where you have daily quests that you get, but then there's also this weekly set of challenges that you complete them, and based on your time through them or your success through them, you get placed on a leaderboard, and the top 3,000 people on the leaderboard win a, like, super exclusive reward. Sometimes it's like a car that is a car that you can get normally, but it has some really cool cosmetics attached to it that you can't get any other way aside from getting in the top 3,000 for that week's challenge. And the challenges are themed around, like, this week it's called Street Samurai, I think, mm-hmm. or like House of the Samurai maybe, but it's all Japanese bikes and cars and different racing events centered around them that you're trying to get the best score on. So with all that stuff, it makes it, like, really, really fun to revisit each week, and there's something really challenging to strive for. And I've just been, they haven't added, like, a battle pass or anything, which is smart, I think. Instead, it's just all centered around these challenges.
Okay.
And then they also have, like, PvP leagues now, which are very cool too. So I definitely recommend it if you haven't played it before. If you can get it on sale or something, it's a really good value.
And is it just, like, driving challenges and plane challenges and stuff like that? Like, almost like a Burnout Paradise?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, there's sort of a story to it a little bit, but it's like you get some cutscenes. It's divided into, I want to say, five different disciplines. So you get like the off-road discipline, the freestyle discipline, the professional driver discipline, and the street racing discipline. And then there's a fifth one that's like kind of combining different ones together into these multi-vehicle events. Mm-hmm. And so within each discipline, then there's like four or five different subsets of challenges, like aero racing, where you're racing planes, touring car racing, where you're racing cars on tracks, and like maybe there's in one of them there'll be like drag racing and street racing, and then you're kind of going through all these different events. But some of them do have some light story stuff tied to them, which is not good, but it's also kind of, it's very strange. Like, the writing is, I think, intentionally really weird and kind of funny.
Okay.
But, like, for example, like, earlier today I was playing a hovercraft race, and in the middle of it, your mechanic guy, who's, like, your partner all along, is telling a story about how he got into a bumper car fight with this girl when at the bumper cars once, and he keeps talking about how they, like, kept ramming each other, and it kept escalating, and one thing led to another. And the whole race, I'm just like, this has gotta be on purpose. And then at the end, he's like, and then our parents took us to get ice cream. We were 8 years old. What did you think I was talking about? And it's like, it's bad, but I think it's bad on purpose. Mm-hmm. And it actually, I usually find it pretty funny. So there's a lot of weird stuff in terms of weird dialogue that pops up in races and everything. But mechanically, yeah, it's a bunch of different challenges. But then you can also just drive around the open world. So if you want to, like, fly to New York and then try to land your plane on top of a building and then drive, then switch to a car and drive off of it or whatever, you can do goofy stuff like that too.
Oh, you can just, like, drive, you can just change into a car, like, automatically anywhere.
Oh yeah, yeah, you're changing vehicles at any time. It's actually very similar to the way that Steep works, which is another Ubisoft multi-sport game. Yeah. But yeah, you can just, like, you hit the right stick, push the right stick in, and then it lets you select between boat, car, and plane. You can turn into a boat in the middle of the highway if you want to. You won't go anywhere. But it's pretty goofy the way that that stuff works. But what's fun about it is, like, it's very absurd at times, but the tone is not stupid. It's still a pretty, like, even-keeled tone of, like, oh, you're competing in these events to earn followers, and it's this adventure camera company that's just like GoPro that's sponsoring all this stuff. I don't know. I think it's pretty well put together at this point, and the game feels a lot better than it was when it first came out. I don't think it's particularly expensive now either.
No, I can't imagine it would be.
And it doesn't have a ton of DLC to buy either. Pretty much everything in it, the season pass they put out, yeah, it looks like it's on sale right now on Steam for like $15. Pretty much everything that they put out via the season pass is like additional cars that you can get for free with the season pass instead of having to buy them with the in-game currency. Mm-hmm. And then everything, you can buy everything in the game with a paid currency, but you would never, ever need to do that. I have never purchased currency for that game, and I have like a third of the vehicles. So, yeah.
Okay. I think my brother plays quite a bit of Crew 2. I think he does it with the full racing rig, though.
Yeah, I don't currently have a wheel set up and everything. I'd like to get back to doing that. I used to play like that. But for me, the Crew is more of a controller game because it's pretty arcadey. But you can also still do all of the like intense adjusting that you can do in something like a Forza Horizon if you really want to get into it.
Last question I have, how's the drifting?
The drifting's good. It's its own event. You can sort of get any car to drift, but there are specific cars for drifting. Mm-hmm. So drift events are point based like they are in real life. They're not races. Mm-hmm. And you have to try to combo together your drifts back and forth. And they're really fun. It's pretty hard to master. But a lot of it too is tied to, getting colored loot for your cars, like green, blue, and purple stuff.
Perfect.
To put into your car, and it increases the power level of the car. And so that can make like your drift car more effective too, but it's very fun to do. And, you could totally set up a race where you just use drift cars and actually race each other too.
Getty, don't tell Steve.
I will.
he's right on this. We're like, man, I got to get purples. Whatever game's got that system, greens, blues, purples, I'm in.
Yeah. And it's pretty, there's a lot of like, you try to max out your car, and then from there you're trying to like re-roll gear to get different, I forget what they call them, but they're like perks that, so like this piece of gear gives you faster nitro refill when you're slipstreaming or whatever. And so you can try to put together the perfect build for all of the 384 vehicles in the game.
So wait, when you swap to like a boat, it's a boat that you pick that you have decked out as well. So you have to deck out every vehicle individually.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can't have a part on more than one vehicle, but it's pretty easy to just like pick your. I mean, you wouldn't really try to grind out perfect gear for every vehicle in the game. So you'd probably pick your favorite boat and then work to get that one set up, and then just use that one. But the nice thing about those weekly challenges I was talking about is that they force you to move out of your comfort zone, and you actually have to use different vehicles that are required by the events for the weekly challenge. And you can pretty easily swap your gear loadout over to another vehicle, so you don't have to like spend a ton of time grinding it out, but okay. It does force you to try something else.
That's awesome. Actually, I might look into the crew too.
Yeah, I think it's definitely worth, like, if you can find it on sale, it's totally worth it.
It's always fun. I like a lot of these, like, I call them my time wasters, where it's like, I guess I'm going to play Warframe for, like, an hour, and then I'm going to play Rainbow Six Siege for, like, an hour. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's totally one of those, but a very relaxing one of those, because it's, you know, it gets pretty challenging if you want it to be, but it's also a huge checklist of activities. There's, like, 100 or so different events, at least, to actually play through, so there's a lot there.
Also, breaking protocol as always. I just texted Steve. He said, "Oh God, I'm now going to be playing this." Okay, so that was the crew too. Thank you for bringing that to us, because again, I haven't looked into that one as much as I would want to have wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
And this week I brought Prey, the most recent Prey, not the one that was for Xbox, the original Xbox.
Okay.
Have you guys, any of you guys played Prey, and or do you guys plan on playing Prey? Man, there's a lot of P's.
You know that I have.
I know you have. Joel, do you want to
play
Prey?
Why did you ask
or?
If you... Oh, God damn it.
I have not played Prey. I would be interested in playing Prey the same way I'm interested in playing Doom.
When you're in quarantine?
So, probably not.
Once the country locks down and I can't do work from home either.
Oh, yeah, that's not going to happen, buddy.
I know.
So the reason why I'm asking is because I don't want to jump in and ruin Prey, but I kind of got to ruin Prey, and that's where I'm like asking where that goes. How about you?
I mean, I was going to say I should log off, but I'm editing, so I'm going to hear it anyway.
Yeah, Pat.
So I've played a good chunk of it. I've not finished it. So I don't know what part of Prey you're planning to
ruin. He wants to wreck everything.
Then you know what? I won't go that far. But I will say, okay, Joel.
Yeah.
Because you're the most unfamiliar here. Prey is a Bethesda-ass game.
Thank you.
Okay.
That turns it on its head. So, first off, it's a very twisty game. Anytime you think you know what's going on, it shifts on you. And that goes up until, again, and I don't want to ruin it, up until the post-credits, it shifts everything into a completely new context.
Okay, again. You started describing this as a Bethesda-ass game.
Yeah.
It's too many options for him, is what he's saying.
You know, well, my concern is that you're maybe talking about Fallout Bethesda?
A little bit.
Well, here we go. Okay, the reason why I say it's a Bethesda-ass game is that it's kind of an open world, a bunch of side missions, and everything in the world is essentially pick-upable.
I would argue that the world isn't that big, Alex. It's a finite space where when you get into,
yeah,
like,
it's a finite
Skyrim
space, but it's,
or...
But what I mean is an open world is in you can go and do anything in any order. You can go to different sections of the map and explore. For
oh, yeah, you can go kill yourself right away.
Okay, so Daddy's clarification makes this like a 75% fucked then.
No, but okay, so here, hold on. We're all getting sidetracked. The reason why it turns it on its head for me was that imagine in like Fallout or Skyrim or any one of those games, you can just fill your bag with cups and plates and all that stuff. The villain is aliens that can turn into those things. So you can walk up to a desk and be like, I'm going to go to this computer terminal and I'm going to find a story thing. And you go to click on the terminal and the cup next to it pops out as an alien ink monster and attacks you. So you have to go through the game. And in the very beginning, I had a wrench as a weapon and I was smacking every inanimate object that was near me.
and you'd see him like shake a little bit, and sometimes they'll run, and then all of a sudden they'll turn into a chair, and you'll see the chair just tilting back and forth. You're like, oh crap, it's a chair.
It is probably like the scariest immersive sim that I have played.
So that, and then also the game opens up. You're part of this company, and you're going to do an experiment. And they say that you wake up and you're in your apartment. They say, "Hey, go meet us on the roof. We're gonna take you to the company. It's cool. There's a helicopter." And you're like, "Okay." And the credits are you're flying by on the helicopter. You see the credits in the sky, which is cool. And then they make you do this experiment. And then all of a sudden the experiment goes wrong, and they're like, "What happened?" And then they kind of start over, and you wake up in your apartment, and you gotta get on the helicopter again. And what you realize is that you end up smashing one. You hit one of the mirrors, and it opens up, and turns out all of that was a sound studio. So the helicopter ride, all of that was fake.
And okay, that sounds kind of cool.
Yeah,
and I liked it when people like for video games. It's still not often enough that I see a really clever twisting of your expectation or like shifting so drastically like the type of environment you're in, like a light switch like that.
And but the way the game is actually played is that you're on a giant space station that goes more horizontal, like each floor is a different. You know, like here's this lab, and here is the power room, and here is health and safety, and here is, you know, all these different, you know, and you go through and explore, and you find it, like, basically all the aliens have escaped, different ink monsters that are shooting beams at you, and you have to go and do the main story quest, but there's tons of also other side quests that you can do. And the game, also what makes it kind of a Bethesda game, is that you can do those quests however you want. And it gives you those options. You can just kill. You can kill your NPC right next to you, and just be like, "All right, shoot them in the head, and they're done." And it says, "Oh, they can't do that quest anymore." So there was one where I had to go and find an officer who was being a pain, and they're like, "You could just go in and shoot him in the face. You can stun him with a stun gun, or one of the." Because I was like looking this up because I'm like, I'm having problems here. And one of the things they're like, "Go to the room next door. It's got the oxygen control. You can just hit the oxygen control, and then he passes out." And I'm like, oh, come on. Like, I could have just done that the entire time? Man. So, you can do the game any way you want and just kind of do these different tasks and quests. But also, there's even more than that. You get neuromods, which are things you install in your brain that give you, like, more stamina, more health. But they give you a part of it where they say, you can install the alien
tech. Yeah, and Alex didn't do himself any favors, and he didn't use any of the alien tech, so.
Because I'm not an alien, man. I'm not an alien.
Are you?
No, shut up! Shut up! I'm not.
Are you gonna have a near moment with every game you play?
Yeah.
No. So no. That's part of the game though, because there are turret guns that sense aliens and they help you kill the aliens. But if you start going into the neuromods where you start installing the alien tech, which gives you like mind control powers or the ability to turn into like a coffee cup, the turrets will start turning on you.
Okay, that kind of reminds me closer than to like a BioShock with the what do they call it, little girls.
You use Adam and you get Sid.
Oh yeah, exactly.
You get your plasmids and whatever have you.
Yes, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but that's kind of why
it's like. Sorry, go ahead.
No, so that's kind of why I like the game is because I chose to actively avoid using the alien powers because I'm like, well, these turrets are pretty helpful. I'm just going to stick to that for a while.
Yeah, but you could get, like, stun abilities if you take the alien mods. You can light people on fire. I felt like it made me more competitive when I had those abilities. It was also easier.
Probably. I had a rough time. Pat, what did you think about this?
Yeah, it's basically like the pinnacle. It's the development studio that did the Dishonored games.
Yes,
And it's kind of like the pinnacle of that, like System Shock, BioShock. It even has some roots in like Thief and Deus Ex style of immersive sim game. But then they married it with that open world kind of concept where you're in the whole world at once. And I haven't finished it, and I can't really tell you why I haven't finished it. But I think it's a pretty brilliant game. I mean, the main reason I think that I've never gotten around to finishing it is because it can get kind of hard depending on the way that you go with it. And I hit a point, I think, where it just was kind of stressful to have to like deal with a new crop of enemies in a new space. But I know there's a certain hump where that becomes less of an issue because you just start to get very powerful too.
Yeah. See, you sold me on it.
Yeah.
I don't know what Alex is doing for last 10 minutes, but
well, and then also you can, like, again, I said, it's like a vertical space station, but it doesn't limit you to that even because you can, like I said, there's all these different ways to go about everything, including there are legitimate service ducts that are for maintenance, but you can go through them, but sometimes there's stuff blocking them unless you spec into strength, and then you can remove the boxes out of them and use those maintenance ducts to get past a locked door. Also, locked doors that you need a key card, you can find it off a body, or if you are good at hacking, which you've spec'd into, then you can hack the door. So there's all these different ways to go about the same thing. And like you said, it gets a little bit easier once you get more powerful. That didn't happen to me. I forgot how to play the game. I played it, got halfway through, then dropped it for 6 months, came back, and I didn't know what I was doing, forgot that I'd modded all my weapons to be really good, and recycled them all.
I have no sympathy.
Oh, yeah, there's Alex. That whole thing.
Like, that's bad.
So I had to start over. I mean, I didn't start over. I started from the halfway point. I just had really crappy weapons, but I was like, you know what? We're going to make this happen. And I did it.
Joel, one of the other really cool things is that you can recycle materials and then use them to craft different items. So there's actually a grenade that you can throw, and it'll recycle everything in the vicinity of the explosion. And then you go and you pick up all the pieces. You take them to the, for lack of a better explanation, like the vending machine that creates the items for you. And you just plug them in, and it, like, poops out shotgun shells.
Yeah. But it's funny because the recycling materials thing just goes along with, like I said, they're like, oh, it just took in a coffee cup, a trash can, and, like, all these boxes, which, again, is, like, a Bethesda thing to have all these environmental objects and turned it into, okay, now I can use it as crafting materials. It's quite the scary game, and it has quite an interesting story because of, like, again, these branching paths and having these alternative routes. And, like, at the end, you have, like, a very specific, like, choice between, you know, A or B, ending A or B. But when it gave me that choice, I had killed the guy who was supposed to give me choice A. And he's like, man, you must have really wanted to do this on your own, huh? It's like, oh, I didn't mean to kill the guy, but it happened.
There's a couple of different endings.
Now here we are. Yeah.
That's the part of Bethesda storytelling and gameplay that I always want to be able to wring every drop out of and enjoy. But then it gets, like for the Fallout games, it gets bogged down by just the what I consider bloat of all the empty space of the world. And this sounds like it could be more within reach for me.
It definitely makes it more obtainable and easily to digest. What I was saying, though, is that the space station is vertical, but you can go out into space and float through. So that's how I started. Once I figured out how to use the map properly, it just became like, well, I'm not going all the way through that lab. That lab was filled with monsters. I'm just going out into space and just circumventing everything. So that's kind of how, again, that game. And also the speed run is like 7 minutes.
Possible.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm pretty excited about Arkane's next game in light of like how well they refined all that stuff with Prey, because it looks like their next game plays with a similar kind of like, it's a contained world where you're trying to go through a set of actions to kind of like finish the narrative, except that you're looping so that you're having like, it's like more run based where you're like dying and coming back, and now you know the last run you went over to the research station on the west side of the island and found a key card, so now you know for your new run where to go and get that quickly, kind of thing.
Hmm.
I don't know. I really like the Dishonored game, so this one was fun to me.
Me too.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to dread it, and I really liked it, especially considering that, again, those, I tend to lose the plot a lot, and this one, it kind of kept me going forward enough to tell me, like, here is your main quest, and then here is your side quest, and pick what you want to do. And I end up doing a bunch of the side quests just because I was like, well, that one actually interests me. I'm kind of curious where that goes or where that thread goes. But for the most part, it kept me on the same track, and I didn't
need to grind or anything like that. It just kind of kept moving forward. So because you can figure out how to do anything. So it, like you can go around and like, oh, I looked it up and I was like, oh, I didn't try that way at all. I had already done something different and I found the answer that way. So, but that was Prey. Now, since Pat introduced me to the crew too, it's going to need to be my Fast and the Furious 9 for a while. The struggle is real with this delay, guys. Let's let's depressively Tokyo drift into the break. Vroom, vroom. Vroom, vroom.
I was really hoping to just say sad car
yeah.
noises.
That was good.
No, I just cried vroom, vroom. And we're back with a couple bonus segments this week. First bonus segment, we're going to go with, we're all in social isolation mode, guys. And because of that, I'd like to know what you're thinking about playing in this isolation time. What do you feel like is a good game to kind of put you in the mode of like, well, I'm going to be here a while, so I better start playing something. Pat, you are our honored guest. What games are you playing through your isolation? What do you think is the best isolation game?
Yeah, I could do a whole hour-long podcast on just that, I think. But if I'm going to be like super honest, I think that something that is multiplayer, if you have friends playing it, is probably going to be the thing that'll give you the most, like, you'll be able to get some, like, social contact in, and also get a lot of time out of too, because competitive multiplayer stuff in particular tends to last a long time. So for me, it's a little bit of a cop out, but I have been pretty obsessively playing Modern Warfare for the last, like, I don't know, I didn't get it when it came out. I got it like mid December. So like 4-ish months. And, I don't see any chance of that, like, slowing down at all. And what's great is that now that they have the solos mode in their battle royale, you can totally like play a doomsday scenario where it's you against a bunch of other people and you have to find weapons and survive. So it's also good training.
Hmm. Okay. That's a good choice. I guess that makes sense. I've been playing a lot of Apex Legends, so.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's sort of similar. The thing with Modern Warfare for me that is part of why it's so perfect is, like, in addition to you have an overall account level that you're leveling up and unlocking cosmetics and stuff with, and then you have a battle pass level that you're leveling up to unlock a bunch of cool looking stuff with, and then you also have individual levels for every single weapon in the game that you're using to unlock a bunch of cool stuff. And so there's so many like carrots to chase that there's always something to do every time you log into play. So, and it's not as boring as Destiny. So yeah, it's great.
Slam Getty, slam.
I was trying to figure out actually. If I can go, like, I have to go PG on there, so if I could just go NC-17.
Hit us with both.
Well, no, I feel like I probably shouldn't do the second one. Well, I am just about finishing up Pokemon Shield. And, okay. You know, Pokemon lives matter, Alex.
What's your hour count?
Not that bad. I could probably boot it up and check, but I've been keeping it kind of on par for whatever the regular playthrough is. Hold on. Yeah, I don't have the volume on. I just hit the save screen here. Oh, wait, nope, I can't. I'm in the final match. So after that, I'm probably going to explore around, try and figure out what Pokemon I want to catch. But I also picked up Octopath Traveler, so that will definitely be a nice time sink here when I'm not at work.
Okay. Octopath Traveler, very good choice. Are you going to start going into Pokemon Online?
Probably not. You know, I've given it some thought, but I'm probably just going to catch what I want. I don't feel like I am obligated, because I already do the Pogo thing, so.
Oh, yeah, you're deep in that Pogo yep. game. Joel, what are you playing in this time of isolation?
So, usually when I'm holed up for one reason or another and find myself with time to burn, or I don't know about you guys, but
Rocket League.
What's
and no game. No objections, but
no objections.
Well, I yes, Rocket League is one of them, asshole. But like, you know. No, go ahead, Alex. Tell us what your choice is.
No, hit me with the other one. Hit me with the other one.
No, you had your chance. And
we'll never know.
But the other one was really cool. Now you're never going to get to know what it was.
Now I'll never know.
It was going to be awesome. It would be your new favorite game.
Oh, but. Joel, tell me.
Stardew Valley. Oh, God.
Alex, what's your... what's your choice?
Well, again, Apex Legends. I've been debating on just like, do I just go through and play an hour of every game, pick one day, and then be like, well, Monday will be Warframe Day, and Tuesday will be Rainbow Six Siege Day. But then I just figured I'd never get good at any of them. So this year has been the year where I'm trying series that I've never tried before, starting from relatively the beginning and starting again. So today I started up Black Mesa for Half-Life 1. I played about half an hour of that, played about an hour of Gears 1, and I've played about an hour of Halo 1. So I'm trying all three of those series, never having touched
any Alex, of them are before. We doing a death count for Gears?
Sure. Yeah. You know what? Okay. The next, I didn't want to do this in the middle of this, but next video game homework, Getty has announced he would like us to play Gears of War.
Yeah, that was my closing statement, so you can go to hell.
God damn it.
Great, now I have to figure out something else.
Everyone's crying this episode. So I'm trying to play all the games that I've ever played because it feels like time is standing still. Doesn't it kind of feel like, guys, doesn't it kind of feel like time is standing
still? I'm literally working 12 hours a day.
Yeah, my job can be done 100% remotely, so.
Well, I just mean more.
It's great, I don't have to drive anywhere, but. Yeah, that sucks.
No, I mean more like the fact that like nothing is happening. There's no progression in the normal, like in the big world. Like there's no sports. There's no
you watch sports.
Like, yeah, and
skateboarding league has been shut down. That's a real fact.
They're still pretending like Formula One is going to happen at some point this year, and it's definitely not.
It took a long time for them to cancel wrestling too. Wrestling just got canceled.
Yeah. Wait, no, wrestling is still going on in the closed stadiums. Yeah,
just with. No audience.
That's some spectacular clips going around of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
That's really weird.
it feels like an Adult Swim sketch.
Yeah.
So, yes, Getty. Everything's getting shut. With everything shut down, it just kind of feels like everything is stuck in the same time zone. Almost like a Thanos snap. You know, some people came back, and when they came back, they're like,
I don't think Joel's seen that movie yet.
No, I did. That's like one of the two movies I saw that year.
So because of that, it just seems like nothing is progressing, and therefore I should play all the games that I didn't play so that once everybody comes back and everything's normal again, I'd be like, hey, of course I played Halo. I played Halo years ago. It's fine. It's totally cool. So that was our isolation games, which, again, we were going to be writing an article about that and inviting some of our friends to do it with us. But for now, our next segment, Guest Spot. Guest Spot, where we... just talk with our guest and try to get a little feel for what they do as content creators. Pat, you're from a little podcast called Gaming Fix.
Yeah, yeah.
I say a little podcast as in it quadruples to quintuples our listeners and triples our size as far as length and followers. Tell us about Gaming Fix.
Yeah. I don't even know if we, I don't know if we might be trending down at this point. I'm not even sure anymore, in terms of number of listeners. But yes, we do like to put out a meaty pod, despite some internal strife about whether that's a good idea or not occasionally. Yeah, we're a video games podcast. We call ourselves Gaming Fix because, the idea is that we could also do other things like Comics Fix and stuff like that. Like Sam and I, one of the hosts of Gaming Fix, we started doing a comic book show, and then he had a child and that fell off. But we've talked about doing Movie Fix and Music Fix and lots of other things. So the idea is that maybe someday we'll have a wider range of shows available. But the main show for sure is definitely Gaming Fix, which we do weekly. We do live recordings of it, usually, that you can find via all of our various channels. We spell it FYX, which is an SEO thing. We all kind of cringed and rubbed our eyes when that idea came together to use that name. But it is at least unique, and we were able to get a domain.
You know, I kind of thought that too, and then I got used to it, and I'm like, well, now it just makes sense, because
that's kind of where we're at. Yeah.
To be fair, we GG Radio is a esports podcast that doesn't seem to be producing content, but they still own that IP.
Yeah, so we kind of tried to pick a name that was somewhat unique. And you know, what the thing is that we like our branding so much in terms of like the way that we've used that, like develop logos and things. So it kind of, we think that like the image and the show, once you listen to it, you realize that we're not like super, super, super extreme 90s, like fake cool, use of a weird spelling. It's more like pretty just genuine, SEO goals. But we've been recording now for like, I guess it's been over 2 years. We're coming up on like 2.5 years here in a couple of weeks or a couple of months. So yeah, it's fun to do. I love that team.
Did it start with you and Sam?
No. So it originally started, on the Giant Bomb Facebook group. Weirdly enough, which is has a strange significance in a lot of our lives. I know for me, my partner and I met via the Giant Bomb Facebook group as well, who I ended up moving across the country to live with. So I have a lot of reasons to appreciate that group. One of them also is Gaming Fix, which, Andre at one point just posted in the group that he was looking for people to record a Game of the Year podcast with, and several people answered, and then he kind of just ended up messaging Alex and Allison and Erica and Sam and I, and we were like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And then our literal first recording was like a 13-hour long Game of the Year podcast. We like basically talked to each other for a couple weeks in a group chat to get prepared for it, and then jumped into a huge recording session to argue about the best games of the year, which was a very weird way to start the show.
Well, yeah, because at that time you didn't know them very well, right? So it was like
not well at all.
Jumping into a big debate about the best game of the year with essentially strangers, and then trying to learn like you know, their personalities and what's a joke and what's not, and that to be tough, right?
Yeah. It was a challenge, and we had no like designs on. At the time, there was no big plan to spin it out into its own thing. We didn't have a name. Like we called ourselves officially unofficial for a while because it was the unofficial Giant Bomb Facebook group. So the whole point was just to produce content to post in that spot. We weren't even going to like post any of that stuff on our own site. But then we liked each other a lot out of nowhere. And decided to continue to do the stuff. I left the Giant Bomb Facebook group over some drama several months after we all met, and never went back. And yet I'm you know, we're obviously still recording the show every week.
That's awesome. I think I'm part of that group. I think that's how I might have found you guys at some point.
Yeah, that's totally possible. I think that Alex still posts new episodes to that group here and there. And there's a lot of really cool people in that group too. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, how does it feel having an international podcast as you do? Like you, cause you guys are so everywhere. Like someone's in England, someone's in Japan. And then other people are like across everywhere, right?
Yeah. So the only two people in the same time zone are Alex and I, which is extremely funny because I live near Seattle, Washington, in the U.S. and Alex lives, in Canada, like just over the border. But we've never actually like hung out because, he like to get to where he lives, I have to go like up and then around. So it would be like a pretty long drive to get there. Or I could take ferries, but the ferries are kind of expensive and, hard to plan. Cause my girlfriend and I have a dog, so it's hard to like plan a time to get away with the dog and everything. So it's funny because Alex and I actually only live as the crow flies, like a couple hours.
Why can't Alex come there?
He has visited Seattle in the past. He just hasn't really had a great reason to come and visit, aside to come and hang out. And like ferry for the day to hang out has always been kind of a like, we should do it eventually and we'll get around to it, but it hasn't been as high a priority. He had a lot of like moving around and switching between different jobs and stuff. There's never seemed to be the best time, but we'll get there eventually. At one point, I was on vacation on the Olympic Peninsula, which is like the part of Washington that juts out into the Pacific, and I could see where he lives from across the water. So I waved very vigorously. It was a little too far for him to actually be able to make out a single person, but I told him that I was doing it. But then, yeah, everybody else is kind of spread out all over the globe. So we have someone who's in the Twin Cities area in Minnesota, and we have someone who Erica has kind of she's on when she can be on. She has a lot of commitments outside of podcasts between school and family stuff, so she's not on it as frequently now. But we all love her and want her to come on whenever she can. She's in New York. Sam's in the UK, across the pond. And then Andre is from about 3 hours south of where I live now, but he lives in Japan and works in schools there. So yeah, we're all over the globe, and it can be challenging. Like right now we record at 6 a.m. on Saturdays, my time.
I've done it. It was hardcore.
Yeah. And we try to get on even earlier if we can. And then when it comes to recording actual long Game of the Year stuff, it can be pretty challenging because it can be like, okay, who's going to be staying up all night this year is usually how it goes. But it's worth it. It's because we get along really well and manage to put together a show we're pretty proud of.
Now, I don't know if that was Getty. Getty, did you want to ask that question?
I wrote it as a joke, but
who would win in a fist fight between you and Alex?
Pick your Alex.
See, I was trying to come up with answers to this. I saw this question before we started recording, and I was trying to figure out like it wouldn't so much be whoever the better. Like, if it came down to just who the better fighter was, Alex is in way better shape than I am. So that's not a question. Like, I have some martial arts training, but like he could definitely kick my ass. But I think what would really be is which one of us could surrender faster, because neither one of us would want to fight. And we would want to not fight so badly that like we'd fall over each other to just let the other one win. So it would end up being a pretty sorry looking fight, I think.
That's awesome. And okay, so you have the game of the year coming. Do you know who's staying up all night at the end of this year? Do you guys have plans, or what's your front runner even?
Oh, we haven't even talked about any plans for this year. Last year, we always do this struggle where we're like trying to figure out when to record it so that we can hit as many people as possible in terms of listeners, but then also not exclude certain games and then work around everybody's holiday plans. So we'll see what happens this coming year. This year we did it actually at the beginning of January, and it worked really well. In terms of like favorites, it's tough because we tend to disagree sometimes on criteria. I'm pretty loose. I would love to consider games that came out in 2019, but that none of us got around to for 2020 awards, but usually everybody else is pretty against that. I know like my personal top 10 list this year so far, Modern Warfare is pretty close to the top just because I've mostly played it this year. But then otherwise, I haven't played a ton that is super, super impressive yet. I'm still working through Ori and the Will-O-Wisps. I think that'll probably be pretty high on my list. And I suspect that that Legend of Runeterra, if it sees a full release this year, will probably be pretty high on my list as well. But I haven't played anything yet that's like a definite lock for the top of the list.
All right.
It's early.
Yeah.
Yeah, very early.
And then, you know, of course, Doom and Animal Crossing.
Yeah, I've never really loved the Animal Crossing before, but I'm going to try it again. I joke about, like, the Nintendo football, which is that, like, every time a new Nintendo game comes out, I always take a run at it thinking that it's going to be awesome, and then I end up being kind of disappointed in it. It happened last year with Fire Emblem. It happened with Pokemon. Basically anything that's not Zelda, I end up just getting frustrated because it's not really quite to my taste as much as I was hoping it would be. But I'm going to try it again with Animal Crossing. It's preloaded, goes live here in like a half hour. I'm going to give it a shot. Doom is one that I will play it, but I don't know that I'm going to pick it up tomorrow. We'll see. I'm interested in it, but also still on the fence as to when I'm going to pick it up.
Now, for me, my last question would be, or just a statement. I like that you guys, whenever I listen to you guys, I'm not listening for like, oh, like I'm sure some of you guys are going to talk about Doom Eternal and all that stuff, but then it's like, oh, I'm going to talk about this weird anime dating game, or I'm going to talk about this weird little platformer, or I'm going to hear about Trails of Cold Steel for 4 weeks straight. which
don't worry, you're going to continue to hear about Trails of Cold Steel for the next 4 years straight if Sam has his way.
The funnier part is that each time I hear it, I'm like, he's going to talk about Trails of Cold Steel again. And then I listen to it and be like, I should probably play Trails of Cold Steel.
You probably should.
Yeah. Yeah.
And each time it just kind of pushes me closer and closer where like, I think like, either I got to stop listening to Game & Fix or I just got to buy Trails of Cold Steel.
No, I know. I'm in the same boat. I'm playing Trails in the Sky right now to get around to Trails of Cold Steel. But yeah, we have a wide range of stuff. I think we have a wide range of tastes. We're all weird and quirky in specific ways. Like I like woke up in a cold sweat the other night thinking like, I got to go and install Crusader Kings 2 right now. and then the next day I'll be all about, you know, trying to get into the beta for Microsoft Flight Simulator. And then Alex will be talking about some visual novel and Andre will have more Destiny news to share. So it's like, we're really all over the place, but I think it works well because, we like each other enough to listen to each other, even when it's a game that individuals aren't particularly interested in. So it works.
All right. Well, last question here. How can we follow you?
So we are, you can get to us, at fix.space. That's FYX.SPACE. In your web browser, you can search Gaming Fix, on, you know, the Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And then we are at Fix Podcasts on, Twitter. And I want to say on Facebook, we're Gaming Fix, but we might be Fix Podcasts there. I don't really log on to Facebook that much anymore, so I don't see us there. But yeah, we're everywhere. And if you want to join us live, we always stream pretty much everywhere. We're at Fix Podcasts on Twitch as well. But we stream on to Facebook and a couple other places. If you just follow us on Twitter, you can find information for all that stuff.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We love you guys, so it was great to have the opportunity to come on.
We're okay
for a while.
The feeling's mutual.
Don't let these other two fool you. We're just okay people.
I think you're raising us too high.
Then okay.
Yeah,
we're trash people.
We're fine. There we go. But no, fine with the deflection, Alex.
Fine. Right there.
That's about. Yeah.
You have far more organized episode documents than we do.
I think that's partially.
That. So on that
partially
metric,
my
you definitely
fault at
win.
This point.
That's good. Okay, let's move on to one last thing. One last thing where we give one last statement, one last sentence, something to send us into the weekend, and you, the listener, into the weekday. For me, I made Quarren tacos Monday, then Quarren beef and cabbage Tuesday, then ISO leftovers Wednesday and Thursday. Tomorrow is chicken. It's just chicken.
It's bad.
Getty?
Someone's in the
bathroom. Yeah. Well,
Getty,
you already wrecked my one last thing, so we got... Who put four? We have 3 weeks. 3 weeks to finish Gears of War.
I was trying to give us some leeway.
3 weeks. It's not a long game.
Merciless.
And I think my comment was supposed to... Oh, yeah. You can play by yourself or with a reluctant spouse. So, have fun, guys.
You know what? I'll introduce it to Beth.
Oh, she's going to hate it.
Thanks.
You know, have you... Okay, so here's a little bit of a spoiler for it, but the premise behind the game is that the guys who created it were really big into paintball. So that's what the shooting and the combat is like. It's a lot about ducking. It's a lot about hiding and finding cover.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, we'll give that a shot. Joel?
I can't wait till that episode so I can just tell you all that Brute Force was better.
That was Brute Force.
My friend in high school, we spent one summer just playing that game.
The full summer?
At least a week of the summer. Maybe it was a rental, but there was like 1 week where we just hung out in his basement playing that game, ordering pizza, and then we came outside one day, and the light shone so brightly in our eyes that it was just like a sign that we needed to take a break.
Is that backwards compat anywhere?
Oh, I hope not.
Pat, what's your one last thing?
I really hope that Andre and everyone else takes me back so I don't have to play Gears of War.
Have you never played it?
I've played enough.
You've played enough to know. This does not bode well for you, Getty. And that will be it for this week's Super GG Radio. Before we go, you can find us on Twitter at Super GG Radio and twitch.tv/SuperGGRadio, where... Hold on. What was it called again? Okay, so currently as we were recording this, there was a live stream of our new streaming show. It is called Keeping It Together with Sam and Kevin, where they are... Kevin Hartwig and his wife are now playing... Divinity Original Sin 2, sticking to Thursdays from 8 to 10. That will be archived. That will be continued to be archived.
Hold on. Shout out to Hartwig to ask him to workshop his titles before he throws them out there.
He was pretty dead set, but let me tell
Alex,
you.
Alex, what was the...
Matrimony... Matrimony Original Sin?
Yep.
That's better.
We workshopped that before the show.
That simple. If you'd like to reach us with questions or input, our email address is superggradio@gmail.com, and provide a review on iTunes or the quarantine poster of your choice. Thanks for listening. GG, Pat.
Thanks, guys.
GG, Joel.
Good game.
GG.
GG, Getty. Good night, everybody. Check it.